There's a very interesting intersection between databases and storage concepts. In this episode, Arjunis will explain the basics to us, this week on Data Exposed. Hi, I'm Anna Hoffman, and welcome to this episode of Data Exposed MVP Edition. Today, I'm joined by Arjunis. Arjunis, thanks so much for joining us today. Before we get started, I'd love to hear a little bit about what you do.
Well, Anna, thank you so much for having me today. I am a principal solutions architect at Pure Storage, and I work with customers around the globe to make sure that the deployments of SQL Server on top of Pure Storage solutions go according as planned. So, you know, I've been doing this for quite a long time, and I am at the intersection of databases and storage, which is sort of a weird spot to be on in the technology world, but this is what I really enjoy.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, it seems like you're the right person to have on the show to talk about storage. And the topic for today is Storage 101 for Azure SQL and SQL Server engineers. So this is an interesting topic because, like you said, it's this intersection of databases and storage. And so I guess I'd love to just start by passing it over to you and asking you, you know, why is storage so important in this space?
Well, if you think about it, databases are all about storing data, and the performance of that storage solution that you're using for your database will determine effectively your fate. How well your database is going to perform, the response times that you're going to get to your queries, your analytics, how fast are they going to go, and all of these things are directly affected by the performance of your storage solution, right? So what I'd like to do today is introduce you to a few basic concepts about storage, and then we'll dive a little bit deeper into how SQL Server and Azure SQL handle I/O versus storage solutions. Okay, so let's go ahead and share my screen here. And then we'll talk about the three basics, the three core concepts of storage. And number one is latency, right? So this is the basic concept of how long did it take for an I/O to complete? Okay, so I issue an I/O from my VM or my bare metal host or my container against my storage device. Right? How long did that I/O take to complete? That's called latency. As you can imagine, there are certain operations that you perform on your databases where latency is extremely important, right? For example, writing to the transaction log is something that requires low latency. If you have high latency writing to your transaction log, because the engine has to follow the write-ahead logging protocol and log everything in the transaction log before it actually does anything with moving forward, that will directly affect your performance, right? Everything will feel a slowdown in the system. So that's the first concept. The second concept is IOPS. IOPS are effectively IOs per second. How many input operations per second are taking place in a given system? But IOPS are sort of like currency. And if I told you that I'm going to give you $1 million, you'd be excited. But if I told you I'm going to give you $1 million from Zimbabwe, you wouldn't be as equally excited. That's because they're different measures, right? So IOPS are bound by the block size or the IO request size. And that's another concept that's important to understand. When an application requests an IO, whether a read or a write, it's actually intending to read a certain amount of data or write a given amount of data. Right? And that determines the I/O block size or the I/O request size. And so the measurement of how many I/Os you have performed in a given during a given second will actually determine how many IOPS your system can push. Okay, so or how many IOPS you've effectively performed during that time. If your system is rated at a given number of IOPS, you know that you're going to be capped at that maximum number of IOPS, whether we're talking a given file system, whether we're talking a given volume, right, or a given disk, it's going to have certain limitations in terms of IOPS. Every single system does. And so the last concept that's interesting to understand is bandwidth. So the amount of data overall that's being sent from your host or your VM, again, or your container to your storage device is called bandwidth. And that's typically measured, well, these days, hopefully you're measuring it in gigabytes per second, right? The lower order of magnitude of measurement for that will be megabytes per second. So that's just a measure of effectively how much data you're sending to your storage device. And as you can imagine, storage devices are also capped by how much bandwidth they can handle at any given time in terms of writes, in terms of reads, in terms of mixed workloads. And in addition to that, you have the constraints of limitations of a given VM. If you're talking cloud, you'd have limitations on how much bandwidth a given VM can issue against the storage device or a set of storage devices. In addition, on-prem, you have the fact that you have cables, pipes, connectivity between your host where your VMs run or your bare metal host runs to your storage device. Or maybe you're talking about a PCIe attached device, so some local storage that you have on your machine. In that case, you're also bound by how much bandwidth you can have in the PCIe bus on your computer itself, right? So, or your server. Right? So all of these things matter. So these measurements are important for the performance of a database. But I want to show you this graphically, and this, hopefully this slide will actually make a little bit sense. So I'm thankful that I have inherited this slide over the years from people that have worked at Microsoft and other places. My thanks go to them. Thomas Kaiser and Jimmy May have modified and changed the slide over the years, so my thanks go to them. That's your storage device, right, on your right-hand side. That is a timeline in seconds for transfers that are going to take place between your, let's assume, VM and your storage device. So your application, in this case, SQL Server or Azure SQL, is going to issue transfers, right, I/O requests against that storage device. You can see that there are different sizes. Remember what I told you, there are different I/O block sizes. Okay, so the things go like this, right? The average amount of time within the unit of measure the I/O takes to complete equals the latency. So let's send one packet across or one request across. And that will be the latency that it takes to complete, right? The disk transfers per second will equal the IOPS. Right, so how many transfers that are effectively sent during that time frame, during that window of 1 second? In this case, I sent 6 IOs, so my IOPS during that time were 6, and the amount of throughput, meaning how much bandwidth I effectively sent or effectively consumed, is 145 kilobytes per second because I am adding all the payloads of all the different IO requests. And that constitutes my bandwidth. Okay, so the other measurement that we typically use in the storage world is, again, the average I/O block size. And that's these are, by the way, perfmon counters, if you guys are connecting dots in your head here. The average disk bytes per transfer will be the actual I/O block size or the actual I/O request size in the average. There's also another measurement that's sort of important, which is the disk queue length, meaning how many IOs I have pending against my storage device. They haven't been served yet. They're sitting on a queue waiting to be served. If your queues grow out of control, you know you have a problem, right? If your queues stay low, that means that you're consistently able to serve those IOs in a given time frame. And that is super important for performance, right? If you have operations that are queued behind others, those operations are going to suffer latency, right? When you reach the cap of performance of a given system, everything else you throw at it is going to experience higher latency. And so you will at some point reach maximum bandwidth or maximum IOPS on a given system. And then anything else you throw at it will just be queued and will experience latency. Typically, a storage solution will behave like a hockey stick in terms of performance. Right? You achieve great performance and all of a sudden everything will just spike from there. All right, this slide that I have here showcases the different I/O block sizes or the I/O request sizes that SQL Server and Azure SQL will leverage for the different operations that the engine performs. You can see that the transaction lock writes can be very small, tiny, 512 bytes even, if you're talking about a transaction log record that is small. So if you picture this in your head, what does that mean? I am performing an operation against, let's say, a tiny table and performing an insert, and my transaction lock record that describes that modification on against that table fits on 512 bytes. And so the engine will only set 512 bytes worth of information against the storage device. However, when you have a system that's busy and it's taking a lot of transactions at the same time, SQL Server would actually group commit those transactions, those log buffers at the same time. Not the transaction, just log buffers that comprise all the transactions involved. And it will flush them down to the transaction log grouped together. And the reason why it does that is that you don't want to experience latency by going back and forth between your storage subsystem and your database server. Right? If you do too many round trips, every time you do a round trip against your storage device, you will incur into additional latency or additional overhead. So it would make sense for you to minimize the amount of I/O that you perform. They do say that the fastest I/O is the one that you don't perform. Well, it's also true that if you perform too much I/O, right, you will better group them up, because otherwise you're going to run into issues. Right? And so you can see here all the other operations like checkpoint and lazy writer that can issue writes against data files, right, of maybe just one page, 8 kilobytes. Or maybe it'll take a whole bunch of dirty buffers from the buffer pool and flush them down to the storage device at the same time. And those will be 1 megabyte IOs. So extremely large, right? The way that I want people to think about this is SQL Server is sort of like, it can go to extremes when it comes to IO, because it can perform those tiny little IOs for the transaction log, or it can perform very large IOs for checkpoint. Or you could be scanning an index and you trigger what's called a read ahead scanning mechanism, right? And that would actually cause the engine to fetch more extents at the time into the buffer pool, precisely to avoid all those round trips against the storage device, right? So instead of fetching one page at a time or one extent at a time, it's going to go ahead and perform larger requests against the storage device. In the same vein, if you're performing backups, you don't want to read little portions of your database at the time, right, to perform a backup. You want to perform more bandwidth, more throughput intensive operations. And that's actually the key to performance to backup, right? You want performance in the shape of throughput on your storage device where your database sits and on the target backup device that you're backing up against. And you need both, because otherwise you're going to be bound by the performance of one of those devices. And so you can see here, there's all the things that happen in the engine that cause different I/O block sizes to be issued. Finally, I wanted to highlight all the different patterns that you can think about on the database engine, right? Not just for SQL Server, for Azure SQL as well. So we talked about transaction log reads, writes, but we also need to consider transaction log reads, right? So the transaction log gets backed up, but maybe you're using replication, maybe you're using CDC. All of these things incur into additional I/O against your files. Data file reads and writes. So reads will be for a backup, for example. Data file read of when you're reading an index or scanning or seeking an index or just fetching a particular page to suffice a query. Writes will be a checkpoint, right? Or maybe a bulk insert. Is that all though? There's tons of things here. The read ahead scans that I mentioned, again, the backups and restores. If you're using in-memory OLTP, you're going to have the checkpoint files in there as well that are going to be created. That's a different I/O pattern against your storage device. And then you also have file initialization. For your data files, you're talking zeros, right? If you don't have instance file initialization enabled, your database files are going to be initialized with zeros. But the transaction log will always get initialized, and that's stamped, actually, with a specific character. That's the hex code for it. Every single time you do something against a transaction log, so whether you grow it or you create a new database file, you're laying out a new transaction log. But there's more. Column store indexes have a particular pattern for I/O. File stream and file table operations against your file system will also incur into a different pattern for I/O. And there's tons of other little things. Look, there's the buffer pool ramp up, right? When you're ramping up your SQL Server, they will actually issue a more aggressive I/O against your storage device in order to fill up the buffer pool as fast as possible. Replication has its own patterns for not just reading from the transaction log, but sending data to the distribution database and then issuing the commands from the distribution database down to the subscribers. Crash recovery, when you start SQL Server or restart your box, or maybe run CheckDB and that internal snapshot gets created, crash recovery has to run. On top of that, crash recovery has its own pattern for I/O as well. And TempDB obviously has its own way of doing things, because you don't need to necessarily persist things on TempDB the same way that you do on regular databases, right? And so even eager writes, right, which are triggered by bulk inserts sometimes when you want to force the writes into the data files right away as opposed to caching them on somewhere. So why do I bring all of this up? Testing and validation. That is really the key for this, right? This is really where I want people to understand all this stuff. If you want to run a workload against a given storage device, you want to test and validate that that storage device will suffice that workload and you will get acceptable performance for your workload. And this is super important, especially when you're moving from point A to point B, right? Where you're moving from some particular piece of infrastructure. Maybe you're sitting on-prem and now you're going to cloud. And now you want to test and validate that workload. And what is the absolute best way to validate and test your workload? Use your actual workload, right? A lot of people out there say, oh, you know what? I'm going to run Disk Speed, or I'm going to run FIO, or I'm going to run, I don't know, Crystal Disk Mark. There's a list of like 100 different tools that you could use for validating IO. But nothing will actually tell you how your workload is going to behave other than running your workload itself. Every single workload has its nuances, right? Ways that it behaves, peaks and valleys, periodicity of the workload itself. You need to understand all these things. And when you want to test and validate your solution, you want to use your actual workload whenever possible. And by the way, I will refer you to Gianluca Sartori's workload tools, which is a fantastic suite of tools. And I understand that you have one of these episodes with Gianluca. We'll refer people to that episode. It's a fantastic way of validating things, right? Because you're effectively replaying your actual workload against a new deployment, whatever that is. And so the other thing that I will remind people is try to change things one at a time. If you make too many changes on your target device, you will not understand which change actually helped. So that is, you know, storage science for you guys.
Arjun, this has been really interesting. You know, I'm still like pretty new to this. I don't understand all of this entirely, but I think what I'm getting is there are certain things that we should understand related to latency, IOPS, and throughput. But you also showed us IO block sizes, which is really interesting to me. And you said different things that you might do in SQL Server or Azure SQL will also result in different IO patterns. I just had one small question there. What's the relationship between the IO block sizes and the IO patterns?
Right. So as I mentioned earlier, if you remember that table that I had there, all of the different operations that the engine will perform will issue different IO block sizes. And so those block sizes will determine how the response of your storage subsystem for that particular pattern. Right. So when you're doing checkpoint, you are likely to see on a very busy system, you're likely to see bandwidth intensive operations, throughput intensive operations. When you have an OLTP workload, you're going to see IOPS bound operations against the transaction log, right? So that's kind of the idea here, right? You try to understand what's happening in your workload versus what's happening on your storage device and understand that storage devices all behave differently. You have a large menu of offerings out there. They all behave completely differently. So to understand what's going to be best for you, there's nothing better than actually testing and validating your actual workload in it.
Gotcha. Awesome. Well, again, thanks so much, Arjun. This has been really interesting. I personally learned a lot. I think our viewers learned a lot. You know, if you have one tip, I know you gave us a lot of tips, but if you have one tip for folks that are still kind of new to this, what would you recommend, you know, they go do or any advice for them?
So my advice for anyone who has any questions or wants to follow up on any of this stuff is hit us up on Twitter on the hashtag SQL Help, which is a fantastic way of reaching out to us, MVPs, that are constantly looking at it and providing free advice and free help to anyone who requires it. And, you know, we talk about a lot of different things in there. You can imagine every single thing about SQL Server, every single possible thing about Azure SQL, you know, we got to cover there. So feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Arjunis. To our viewers for tuning in, thanks for joining us. If you have any comments or questions, please put them in the comment section, like this video, subscribe to our channel, and we hope to see you next time on Data Exposed.